This is the Astrology University podcast, helping you find inspiration, insight, and connection through the study of astrology. And I'm your host, Tony Howard. Well, hello, friends, and welcome to this episode of the Astrology University podcast. And it is time for the Cosmic Eye Forecast Aquarius Season 2021. And I am joined by the amazing and talented Vanessa Montgomery. Hey, Vanessa.
Hey, darlings. Hi, Tony. How are you today? It's fine Aquarius day.
I'm doing great. This isn't just like a regular Aquarius season because the sun is in Aquarius, but like there's a ton of planets in Aquarius. So this is a really great episode, and I'm really excited to share all things Aquarius. So let's just dive in and take us into Aquarius season, Vanessa.
Okay. Yeah, it's really dialed up and amplified this season. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes out and who we get attracted to, you know, whose voices start to be amplified as well. So the basics of Aquarius, the solar season, it's transpersonal, the third of the air signs, fixed air. It's yang externalizing in the realm of course, ideas and ideals, communication. And, of course, being a fixed sign, it's a certain point in a season, which is the middle of a season when the weather is more stable. And for you guys in the Northern Hemisphere, that's winter, so the crack of winter. And here it's the height of summer. It is so hot right now. It's really boiling. It's really set in and you can really feel that. So it's the beginning of that. How is it there, Tony? Freezing? Snowing?
Yeah, it's cold. We had some snow last week where I am. And it's definitely cold at night, but we get quite a bit of sun where I'm at here in Colorado. Yep. So it makes the winter a little bit more tolerable.
Well, our backgrounds, if you are watching on a YouTube, are really calling it out. I've got the hot sun here. Right. Tony's got the snow-topped mountains in the background. Yeah. So with Uranus, there's that idea, it's opposite Leo. So when we get to the full moon, so rather than the individual, it's the group. So would you say the Aquarius is the original groupie, Tony?
I like that. Yeah, that's a great image.
And they have the statement, I know, or I've heard someone say, I reform. They're certainly reformers of the system that Capricorn preceding them set up. So they come along and see, well, actually, this isn't serving this large group of people. Let's reform and tweak it, or more than tweak it, change it. It's egalitarian, it's libertarian, it's air, but high-minded intellect, very detached, because you need that detachment of emotions to go into a pure rational weighing up of things. So we see it as a very scientific vibe, scientific sign. They, you know, they talked about they're very progressive and tend to live in the future. And I'm going to get Tony to talk about the Uranus versus Saturn rulerships, which I'm finding very interesting to think about. Actually, Tony's brought up a few great points on that. They're very social. So Aquarius is like the original socialite as well as the social activist. So they tend to like, I thought it was interesting looking at, you know, space. They need more space. It's that air, spaciousness, a lot of space, like way out in space. And that's where often their minds do like to travel. If they're, you know, there's different Aquarians, are they dialed up or as Tony and I were talking about before, like Jennifer Aniston. So I was thinking about space, a room of one's own. That idea is, to me, very Aquarian. So, of course, Virginia Woolf wrote that book, A Room of One's Own, and she had some in Aquarius. She also has the Taurus squares to it that is the signature of the season as well. There's the alien archetype, and I think of that with Aquarius, it's more the Uranian way that I guess we put that filter on. It's more like then aliens aren't, it's not like an alien being, maybe it is. It's more like it's just so sort of progressive, you don't know what they're talking about, you know. And I have friends like that. You know, I'm just sort of catching on to what they were saying 25 years ago. And I see myself as being reasonably progressive. I just have to keep tabs open with some things that Aquarians say that are particularly dialed up. The rebel with a cause or the pitfall without one. They're very like, they do tend to like reading and books, communication, the writing, but more long form. Like they're not the type that is necessarily just going to stop at the headline. They'll read the article right through and then they'll probably write something in response because it's about getting that non-personal communication back. So the pitfalls, of course, is overly rational. It's like too much of that, the overly rational, perhaps like a personal touch. They can sacrifice the self, the sun, for the cause, the group or the collective. You know, that's not serving them. Perhaps it needs to be balanced. There's that Leo axis opposition as well. They can be very impractical. So they're experimental. So is this useful is a good question for the Aquarius experiments. Is this useful? They can get too lost in their head and lose touch with their bodies, can get lost in ideas and ideals at the cost of the actual personal people involved, especially if they're in a relationship with them. And I've been thinking about, you know, this sort of dialed up Aquarius vibes with the Jupiter and Saturn in Aquarius as well. And in my mind, I keep going to like mini air age or mini ice age because I've seen on the internet, oh, it's the age of Aquarius. I'm thinking, well, it's not officially, we're approaching the cusp, but it is maybe a mini air age, mini age of Aquarius, especially this month.
Definitely this month. This month is definitely month. The age of Aquarius, just for a month.
Yeah. And of course, like I think of, you know, they even have their theme song from, is it the 70s, the age of Aquarius?
Yeah.
So hopefully we hear a bit of that on the socials. And but actually the age of Aquarius or mini age that I mention sometimes is the millennium because there was a stack of planets in Aquarius at that time. So if you look back, you can get the feel and it was very stripped back, sort of futuristic. Philip Stark, I think his name was one of the big designers. So you look at the designers that really created that, like we remember that time for. Like I was studying fashion, it was so stripped back, like collars were taken off. It was just very streamlined and the unisex side as well, which I thought are interesting. So we'll see what comes up with the I don't know, a month pop of fashion and then going forward into this year with both Jupiter and Saturn in Aquarius. That should change things. So I was also thinking of the quote that just was so famous by Steve Jobs in 97. He's got Mercury in Aquarius. To me, it's more on the Uranian side. So that's why I really want you to talk about the Saturn and Uranus after this. So, you know, we all know it. Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, see things differently. Like it's all what we think of with Aquarius. They're not fond of rules. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them, but the only thing you can't do is ignore them because they change things. Like there's so many little keywords there. We see they push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius because the ones who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world are the ones who do. So that's from 1997. Tony, take it away with the traditional rulership versus Uranus.
Yeah, I'm somebody who just uses Saturn as a ruler for Aquarius. I did a research project on this after studying some old books by Charles Carter and Margaret Hone, who were great teachers from the Faculty of Astrological Studies. And both of them had suspicions about assigning Uranus as the ruler of Aquarius. And that was the first time I'd heard that. Then I heard Rob Hand he does a really funny rant about how Uranus can't be the ruler of Aquarius because Uranus is so disruptive and Aquarius is fixed air. And he's like, you can get an Aquarius to change their mind maybe once.
Good luck.
It's like, yeah, he talks about how hard it is to get an Aquarian to change their mind. Whereas Uranus as an archetype is about blowing up the system and changing everything. And that's really not Aquarius. Sometimes people will say, well, oh, but Aquarians are contrarian, which definitely seems to be part of the archetype. But to me, that's coming from the Saturn rulership as well, where Saturn, like Mars, is one of those planets that can say no really well or easily. And so I think that Aquarian or that contrarian side of Aquarius comes from Saturn. So I did a research project on it, and I basically used rulership to think about whether I found Saturn more operative as a ruler. So I'm really thinking of rulership in a technical way, not in terms of affinity, if that makes sense. So for instance, if you've got Aquarius on the seventh house cusp, I looked at the planet Saturn and the planet Uranus to see which one more accurately seemed to be describing what was going on in that person's relationships or with their partner. And you can see some of the results of that research in a webinar I did called Revisiting Aquarius. And I'm just thinking, I think I'd actually do Justin Timberlake's relationship chart in that one, because he has Sun in Aquarius and he has Aquarius on the seventh house cusp. So that's kind of a fun example. And I kind of go through his relationships there to kind of make my point there. But after doing a lot of research, I was really convinced that Uranus doesn't work as a ruler for Aquarius. And you can kind of check out my research and see what you think. I'm happy to hear your thoughts on it because it's a work in progress for me. But again, Uranus is unpredictability and disruption. And I see Aquarius more as working within a system to change a system. I do think that Aquarius has to do with revising systems and changing systems, but it doesn't have to do with getting rid of systems. I don't think Aquarius is the original anarchist. And when I had that idea in my research as well, I thought, well, if Uranus and Aquarius are our buddies here, then we should see anarchists. We should see Aquarius highly represented in the charts of anarchists. And it's barely represented, but most anarchists have really strong Uranus aspects. So that's the key here, is that those Aquarians that you've heard about or seen as examples of as kind of exemplifying the Uranian archetype, if you look at their charts, all the ones that I looked at have really strong Uranus aspects in their chart, which account for that quality coming through, whether it's Uranus in aspect to the sun or moon, or Uranus in aspect to one of the four angles. So I could go on and on about this. I love this topic, but I'll leave you with a couple of little one-liners for Aquarius. I think Pisces says we're all one, and I think Aquarius says I'm one of you. So Aquarius, as Vanessa was pointing out, has to do with the individual, and the individual as part of the collective. I think with Pisces, we can kind of feel like we're all one as merging with the collective or in that sea of the collective, whereas Aquarius is that awareness of the collective and the awareness of the individual's role within the collective, and how where Leo might say, I'm special, Aquarius says, none of us is special, or, you know, we're all the same.
And what about you, Tony? Classic Aquarius.
You know, I wanted to talk about Jennifer Aniston because I think she's a great example of this kind of social leveling that you can see with Aquarius, where there you can see the idea or the concept of the common person or the every person. And I think she's a great example of that because she just seems like really approachable, like somebody who doesn't necessarily put on airs and that you could just be friends with. She doesn't seem like, yes, you know, I picked for my classic Aquarius a composite of three people who were born within a month of each other. Because in 1962, in February, there was an Aquarius stellium. And so I studied the charts of as many people from that time as I could find to learn more about the Aquarius archetype, because there's a lot of it, just like there is this month. So, you know, if I live long enough, maybe I'll study the people born this month as well. The three people I picked are Clint Black, Garth Brooks, and Sheryl Crow. Now, I picked them because they have all three of them have some themes in common in their lives that are really similar, which is interesting because they all have the strong Aquarius stellium. But they also evoke something, speaking of contrarian, something contrary to this description that you often find in sun sign books of Aquarius is like the weirdo and you should be happy flying your freak flag and celebrate being different than everyone else. And instead we find these people who are considered really normal in quotes and also representative of a large, large group of people and popular with a large group of people, not for being different, but for doing what they do really well. So all three of these folks are wildly successful musicians. They all received, interestingly, positive support to pursue their interest in music from an early age in their families growing up. So they all three have a story where they got interested in music at really young and their family was really supportive supportive of them pursuing their careers. But especially a standout in their stories is their fathers. Their fathers were especially supportive. And I found that really interesting, given that they all have Saturn in Aquarius. The two fellows here are, of these three, are the top selling country music artists of all time. Now, country music isn't thought of as one of those unusual, strange genres. So I think that's another great example. It's thought of as a conservative genre. So, and again, I'm thinking about Saturn's rulership of Aquarius here. Going a little bit further, the two of them aren't known for revolutionizing country music with a new style, but instead they ushered in a period of revival of an older, more classic form of country music, because they basically came along at a time when country music had basically merged with pop quite a lot. And they were like, hey, you know, this is getting away from our roots. Let's dial it back to what's really country music's essence here, and going back to this older form of country music. So again, just something that kind of stands in contrast to some of the things that you'll normally read about Aquarius. Garth Brooks is famous for his anthem to the common person, Friends in Low Places, and has in the chorus, I have friends in low places. I'm not a country music fan, so I know very little about Garth Brooks or Clint Black. Everything I know, I've read about them, but I found that a great correlation. And then Sheryl Crow's big hit, All I Wanna Do, is a summer anthem that at first sounded a bit like Leo to me, because the chorus, all I want to do is have some fun. It's a great summer song. But if you read the lyrics, it's really an anthem again for the common person, including some thinly veiled jabs at pretension and elitism. And those are things that Aquarius does really well. And in a nod to Saturn and its association with time, Clint Black's big hit was called Killing Time. So that's my classic Aquarius for this month. And that brings us to the monthly moons. So tell us what's going on with the moons this month, Vanessa.
Okay, well, we have a full moon coming up on January 28th. So of course that's opposite the sun in Aquarius. The moon is going to be in Leo. So balancing out that axis. And that's at nine degrees Leo for the full moon. And this one is, it's got a lot going on with it. It's in forming a T-square, so with Uranus, so that dialed up iconoclastic, like that just shake and rattle and roll is going to continue happening that we've gotten used to over the last little while. It's definitely not going anywhere soon. It's, the sun is flanked by Jupiter on exact, actually, and Saturn on the other side, and Mars is conjunct that Uranus, forming the tip of the T-square. So I'm guessing that it's going to really, again, we're going to have ideas, ideals, something that we need to break through, that balance of the individual, like, I mean, we're seeing it in the US so much, the individualist kind of outlook, and the, with the Leo and the Aquarius, more group, what's better for the group, and social care, like how do we look after people? Yeah, so Mars and Uranus are at the peak of that in Taurus. So to me, that's action and some sort of breakthrough, or certainly conflict. So we could see something on the world stage, or we could just feel those vibes, especially if you have personal planets that are caught up in that mix. Yeah, I've started seeing people whose personal planets are caught up in these mixes, and things are falling apart in their life to push them on, push. And I've just been saying, well, what's the change bringing you? Like, what are the benefits of this happening? Make the most of it, ride that wave. If you resist it, that's where the problem is. So look forward, not backward, and try to hold on. So yeah, that's been really interesting to watch. And then we have a new moon in Aquarius, which is where we've got this like big lineup of planets in Aquarius. Tony, you said five planets. I counted six once the moon goes in.
Once the moon goes in, it's six. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
So at 23 degrees Aquarius, Saturn at six, Jupiter conjunct Venus at 12, Mercury in Aquarius, which will be retro, and of course the sun and moon conjunct at 23 degrees.
And what's the date again on that, on the new moon?
That's the 23rd. Oh, sorry, February 11th, depending.
February 11th. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, what is it? Mars in Taurus will square that moon, sun, Mercury, and Venus. That's what I've written here.
That sounds about right.
So again, with the squares, that Taurus square, I mean, if you're not looking at planets and just looking at the archetypes of the signs, it's just full of Taurus square Aquarius And there's Jermaine Greer reflecting that in her chart as well. So, yeah, same vibes. No trine, no easy out with that one. And Uranus is exactly square Chiron at the time, just saying. So, yeah, setting intentions on that new moon, you'd want to go along with that vibe of breaking through, I'd say. This, you know, Saturn and Jupiter's conjunct Venus, which is really nice, exactly. But they're not up with that sun-moon conjunction. So, yeah, what would you do with that one, Tony?
Well, I'm going to talk about that one when we get to our opportunity section. So, because that Jupiter-Venus conjunction, although it's not exactly close with the other planets, it's still a really nice aspect to take advantage of that day. So I'll talk about that in just a little bit.
Okay, well, let's move through to what's the headlines this month, Tony?
Yeah, I think, well, first is what we've been talking about, which is right now, as we're recording this, there are four planets in Aquarius, and that alone would be news. But starting on February 1st, there's going to be five. And then, of course, when the moon goes in for a couple of days, there will be six. That's huge. That's a lot of Aquarius. We're all majoring in Aquarius right now. If you want to learn something about Aquarius, pay attention to what's being said this month and what's happening in the collective. And of course, if this is an important part of your own chart, pay attention to your own chart. And I'll talk again more about that. Right before I got on the call, I was walking by the TV and I literally heard one of the news people say they were talking about getting new leadership into the White House. And she said, it's like a breath of fresh air. And I was like, it is, it's air. It's a lot of planets in air. So that was really, really
fresh
perfect.
Winds blowing and change of the guard, fresh winds. It's that's the thing to listen out for, is that you start to hear literally in the way people speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, the archetype feeling.
It's everywhere if you pay attention. It's amazing. But the big news, of course, which you may have heard about already, is that Saturn will be squaring Aquarius. We had Saturn square Aquarius already, in my opinion, last year. The aspect wasn't exact. It didn't perfect, but it got very close last year when Saturn went into Aquarius. It was, I think, within 2 or 3 degrees of the square to Uranus. So we had a taste of that, a preview of that last year. Now it's forming the exact aspect, and it'll do that a couple of times this year, I think 3 times this year. So it's the major aspect this year. It's the one we're going to look at. And we're going to have 2 webinars at Astrology University in February, because this is such an important aspect this year that'll just look at the Saturn-Uranus square. So I'm not going to go into super detail here right now. I do want to say a couple of things about it. But check our events calendar for those webinar dates, and I'll give them to you again at the end of this podcast. I think the first one is January 30th, and the second one is mid-February. So check those out. And those will be webinars that you can reference all year, and they'll be juicy all year long. But to start, it's worth holding in mind that in terms of the longer 45-year Saturn-Uranus cycle, you can look at any two planets and kind of think about their relationship as a longer cycle. And in terms of that cycle, this square that we're in right now is the closing square of that cycle. Issues that began to constellate with the beginning of that cycle, which started with the conjunction in 1988, are now coming to a head for resolution. And that idea of coming to a head is really embedded in the closing square. This is another chance for integration that's been trying to happen throughout this whole time period, but hasn't quite yet. These kind of integrations are always really challenging. They take time and effort. And so with this closing square, there might be a sense of, oh, now I get it. Because these issues have percolated and been swirling around in the collective consciousness for a long time. And they kind of seem to, they hit you over the head until you pay attention. And in the closing square, it's a time where you might just finally wake up to what's really up. And it's time to take action. Dane Rudyard called the waning square a crisis in consciousness. So it's a time when things break down so that breakthroughs can finally take place as we wrap up this cycle and begin to bring things into a close as we prepare for a new cycle in several years when Uranus and Saturn make the next conjunction. As Brian Clark says, Saturn and Uranus polarize conservative and liberal forces. Have you noticed? Issues relative to these energies dominate the Saturn-Uranus story right now. These are dramatically visible in U.S. politics, but they're also visible in many other parts of the world right now as well. So just open your eyes, watch the news, and you can see these dialogues taking place just about everywhere you look. As I've been saying for about a year now, I don't really do concrete predictions, but I think we can confidently predict that there will be protest and revolution all throughout this year. And that happens whenever these two planets are in tension with each other. So there's a conflict here between the old, represented by Saturn, and the new, represented by Uranus, as inevitable change, because change is inevitable. But change threatens and frightens those that represent the status quo, or those who face the kinds of changes that are coming and threatening their way of life or their outlook. Saturn in Aquarius puts a focus on building and upholding structures that create support and that support a more democratic style of participation and culture in which all voices matter and everyone can participate and everyone's valued. So with Saturn in Aquarius, we might see laws strengthened to create or enforce these kinds of protections. Of course, this is an ideal. I'm not saying that we're going to realize some grand ideal here, but we'll work towards it. And it's always a work in progress, and we will make progress during this time. It's one of the strongest energies at play right now. And there's a popular idea out there that the trajectory of history aims toward greater personal freedom, autonomy, and equality. I don't know if that's true, but I really love that idea. And during any kind of Uranus transit stimulus, we might see advances in that direction. But with Saturn in Aquarius specifically, we might see, again, creating some laws and structures and protections that actually enforce and uphold that kind of democratic participation in culture. As Saturn participates in that story, the structures are built to facilitate that growth and change. That's when the archetypes are working together well. Uranus, and we know that they don't always work like that. Uranus in Taurus represents disruptions and challenges, just period, straight across the board. Uranus is often represented by those who challenge the status quo to create more freedom. Now, that doesn't mean that they're fueled by higher ideals, right? But they can be. But they're not always. That intention can be yoked to those high ideals, or it could be just a willful expression of personal freedom at any cost without consideration for the collective. That can be Uranus as well. And we've definitely seen some of that version of Uranus in 2020, for example, with the anti-maskers that claim that they have a right to not wear a mask, which, as we know, is an act that can protect themselves and others in this time where we have a global pandemic. And they're doing it in sheer defiance of authority. They've made not wearing a mask a political statement representing their right up to freedom of choice at any cost. And the important part of that phrase is at any cost, because there is a cost right now that involves, that can potentially involve death. Right? So that's on the table here when we're in a global pandemic. But as we apply some Aquarian objectivity and analysis of the data, the death toll in the US shows that that impulse wasn't only short-sighted and selfish, it was deadly. So Uranus is the liberator and emancipator when it's unlinked from a higher ideal is dangerous and disruptive. Now, Uranus linked to this idea of personal freedom, I would call that a higher ideal, but in its current expression, in the example I gave, I think it's pretty clear to see how it's just dangerous and disruptive. So there's been so much news about the insurrection at the Capitol that happened in the United States last week. I won't rehash those details, but that's also a lower expression, I think, of these Uranian energies in response to Saturn that's on full display for anyone to see. And so you can really get a window into these archetypes at play and in a square. The square is attention, and you can see that encapsulated in that event as well. So when I say in reaction to high Saturn, by high Saturn, I'm referring to personal responsibility, the just rule of law, or adherence to a code of conduct that has an intention of keeping us all safe from harm. So that's also part of the collective dialogue right now that you can tune into. And all of this is unfolded against the backdrop of Neptune's transit of Pisces, which is important to take into context because that makes misinformation, disinformation, and conspiracy theories a serious problem that has fueled much of the discontent that we see unfolding in response to a higher form of Saturn. People are literally angry enough to commit murder based on lies and fantastic deceptions right now in the midst of all these energies swirling about. Outer planets always call us they really test our limits here, and we're really being tested right now. as I wrap this section up, I have hopes that we'll see accountability as a theme right now, because last year I noticed that when Saturn went into Aquarius and was approaching the square to Uranus, we saw for the first time really in history in the United States, greater accountability for the police and their racism-infused brutality, which has been going on for many, many, many years. This was striking in the context of the lack of accountability or justice for many years before that, in many instances of police brutality that ended in death. So something seemed to shift last year. And already this year, now that Saturn and Jupiter are in Aquarius, we're also seeing the idea of accountability entering into the public discourse really loud and clear. So I have hopes that that's going to be a theme. And it makes me wonder if that's something that we should kind of, I used the word yoke earlier, but it seems a good word here, yoke to the Aquarius archetype, especially with Saturn and Jupiter in Aquarius right now. So we'll have to see how this plays out. There are going to be a lot of court proceedings this year. And as Jupiter's going to spend a good amount of time in Aquarius this year, but it's also going to dip into Pisces here and there. So we'll just have to kind of see how things unfold. One idea being talked about that we might make progress on this year is police reform. With Saturn and Jupiter in Aquarius, we could see an emphasis less on getting rid of the police, but instead on restructuring how the police force works and revisiting the intention of the police to protect and serve all people equally, bringing in that Aquarian ideal without prejudice or malice. Again, as an ideal and as an intention, you know, I'm not saying we're going to get there, but we might make some progress in that realm this year. This Saturn-Uranus story will permeate all of 2021, so there will be much more to come and we'll get to watch it all unfold. On a personal level, if you want to make the most of these energies as they're unfolding, first thing to do is look and see if you have planets in early to mid degrees of Aquarius, Leo, Scorpio, or Taurus. If that's you, you're on duty now to embody and express the highest potentials of these energies that you're able to. Part of that means balancing and integrating your need to shake things up and honor Uranus and get closer to what might look like a free expression of your own individuality, Uranus, while also respecting universal laws and Saturn, while being even more responsible than you have been, whatever that means for you, and operating from the highest place of integrity that you're able to. And I'll just close out this section with a quote from Bell Hooks, who has Aquarius on the midheaven with Saturn and Uranus in a square aspect in her natal chart. She said, in one of her books, if women want a feminist revolution, ours is a world that is crying out for feminist revolution, then we must assume responsibility, Saturn, for drawing women together in political solidarity. That means we must assume responsibility for eliminating all the forces that divide women. I think in that quote, you can hear everything we've been talking about there, from the Aquarius midheaven to Saturn and Uranus in aspect. So with that, I will turn over to a couple of thoughts about the Mercury retrograde cycle. Now, there are going to be tons of blogs and podcasts about Mercury retrograde, so I won't repeat all the usual stuff here. I just want to name the dates for you for the podcast. So the Mercury retrograde cycle is going to be January 30th to February 20th. Mercury goes into the shadow period on January 15th, or that was a few days ago, at 11 degrees Aquarius. It stations and turns retrograde on January 30th at 26 degrees Aquarius, and that's an important day to note for concentrated Mercury energy, as Mercury just comes to a standstill in the sky, basically, from our perspective. So check your chart to see if you have planets or angles at 26 degrees Aquarius, Scorpio, Taurus, or Leo. If so, this retrograde is going to be one to make the most out of. So clear out your email inbox, hit those old messages you've been putting off or responding to, clean up or clear out some mental clutter. This is Mercury retrograding in an air sign. For me, that's represented in a physical way, that mental clutter, by all these pieces of paper and notes I have all over my desk. So I have plans to get to work on those during the Mercury retrograde cycle. What are you going to, do you have things like that you might work on yourself, Vanessa?
Well, I'm just thinking, I've got all the notes and bits of paper all in a bit of a mess around the bottom of my table on my floor. So yeah, that could be a really great way to use it. And yes. I'm just thinking, you know, it's quite convenient to have that Mercury retrograde in Aquarius, because it will give people an opportunity to reflect on the ideals that they're like perhaps doggedly fixed onto You know, yeah. I do think this is a very opportune retro cycle, actually. There's quite a lot of positives to it, even though maybe it will throw things in the air. we need that even more, but we kind of do need that.
That's a good point, though, that word dogmatic, because we usually associate that with Sagittarius, but I don't think it's a bad word for Aquarius as well, when Aquarius really kind of gets up on a high horse, which is another Sagittarius phrase. but I think that it can apply in some ways to Aquarius as well. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I did see that image of people scaling the walls of mostly white men scaling the walls of the White House, and that was shocking. And to me, that's, you know, they are hell-bent on this. It's very Aquarian, maybe Uranian as well, but it's that fixed idea. It doesn't mean that it's right, doesn't mean that it's wrong, but it is fixed, and it needs some revision, obviously, because this clash is coming in, or has happened and continue to.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, Mercury retrograde can always be a good time for self-reflection, to sit with your thoughts for a bit, to slow down a bit in that direction. And I think that's great advice, to go over those places where you feel fixed in your mind, and see if you can clear things out just a little bit.
Yeah. And especially find
a new perspective.
And in your birth chart, obviously, what area is that happening in? So that's going to be a bit more specific. And any planets that it's going to hit, if you are an Aquarius, later degrees Aquarius or mid, this is going to really impact you. So just be open to the opportunity that it brings as well, to readdress a few things or redo things or course correct somewhat.
Yep. Yeah. So Mercury goes back to 11 degrees Aquarius, where it stations direct on February 20th. So that's another date to mark in your calendar, February 20th. And also look for that degree in your chart, 11. So we got between 11 and 26 degrees Aquarius. That's the focal point here. And Mercury clears the shadow period on March 13th at 26 degrees Aquarius. I'm not somebody who says to put your life on hold while Mercury's retrograde, but I do think it's great advice to go along with the slower pace that you might notice, and be deliberate and careful with your words. Also to use this time to go inward, like I said, to collect your thoughts and reflect on your place in society, maybe. That might be a way to step into that Aquarius energy and think about how you can contribute your best gifts, also for the betterment of everyone else. And again, like Vanessa said, focus on the house where you have Aquarius in your birth chart. So I just wanted to do one more new thing this month is as part of this section, and I'm just calling it the declination report. And in this section, I'm going to talk about out of balance planets, if there are any, and then any parallels that are available to tap into.
And I love that you're doing this, Tony, the declination report. I'm here for it. Let's go.
Awesome. So declination, if you don't know, is just another measurement of the planets. And I won't nerd out on the technical part of that right now. Let's just talk about the dates and the meaning. And we have two moon out of balance periods in this Aquarius season. So January 25th roughly to 27th, we have the moon out of bounds in both Gemini and Cancer. And then February 7th to 9th, the moon out of bounds in Sagittarius and Capricorn. So general advice for moon out of bounds on those days is to watch your emotions, especially if those signs are really critical in your chart. So give yourself space to feel and process. Your feelings may take up a little bit more space on those days anyway, but give yourself space to be in that process. If you're just kind of moving along at a fast pace and you're not giving yourself that space, make sure you carve out a little bit of time to be with your feelings. And then if something big is coming up, my advice with the moon out of balance is to wait and process your feelings before acting on anything. In general, my advice is to wait for the moon to be back in bounds before you take action on anything. And since we're just talking about a couple of days here, that shouldn't be a problem at all. So the other thing I want to talk about in the declination report are parallel aspects, and those can be interpreted like conjunctions between planets, but they're especially important when they also coincide with conjunctions, which makes a conjunction the strongest kind of conjunction that there can be. And most astrologers will say in general that a conjunction is the strongest type of aspect in the first place, but it's even underscored more when the planets are both conjunct and parallel. And a quick astronomy tip for seeing this in the sky is when you look up in the sky and you can see two planets right next to each other, they're actually conjunct and parallel in those moments. So if you can think back to times when you've looked up and seen Venus and Jupiter in the sky, and you'll actually have an opportunity to do that next month, those planets are conjunct and parallel. Sometimes when there's a conjunction, you look in the sky, they're not right next to each other. And that's when they're conjunct, but not parallel. So that's as technical as I'll get for you today. But our first parallel I want to talk about is Mars and Uranus. Mars will be parallel Uranus from January 7th until roughly the 21st. So they're already parallel, and they're parallel as they move into this conjunction that Vanessa mentioned earlier. Of course, strengthening their conjunction in Taurus and emphasizing and underscoring that Mars-Uranus connection and that energy. And I'll say a few words about that in just a little bit. Jupiter and Saturn have been parallel for some time. And by February 5th, that parallel is going to start to separate as they begin to move out of that strong connection that they've had due to also being conjunct in Aquarius. So that when they formed the conjunction in December, they were parallel and they've been parallel this month. So it's been a really strong Jupiter-Saturn time. Then the third parallel I'm going to talk about is between Venus and Jupiter. That starts around February 9th. It tightens up as they also move into conjunction around February 11th, date that Vanessa mentioned earlier. So it's a date to watch and mark on your calendar. This parallel is going to extend that strong aspect of flow related to all things Aquarius. And I'm calling it an aspect of flow because it's a Venus and Jupiter conjunction. And that I think that feeling of flow is going to extend a little bit because of this parallel through about February 16th. If you're in a part of the world where you can see Venus and Jupiter in the night sky, look up if you can during this time period, and they'll just snuggle up together in a very beautiful way when those planets are usually very bright and beautiful when they get right next to each other. Mercury is going to be parallel Uranus from the 13th to the 17th. Now, of the parallels I've talked about, this one is the weakest this month, since Mercury and Uranus won't be in aspect by degree. They are going to be in a separating square, but they're long past the square, and there are quite a number of degrees between them, although they're still in square by sign. Still, I think this parallel from the 13th to 17th presents an opportunity for more intellectual breakthrough and problem solving. I think that's a theme this month. So put your thinking cap on during this time and try to tackle some mental roadblocks or puzzles that you faced during this period from April 13th to 17th. So, and now we are to our section called Opportunity Knocks. And what do you do when opportunity knocks, Vanessa?
Well, you go and open the door and invite that opportunity in.
I switched it up with you.
I like it.
Awesome. So do you have some signatures you want to talk about, or do you want me to share mine first?
I'll just say I picked out the Venus sextile to Neptune and Venus conjunct Jupiter, which you'll be talking about. So you go for it.
Oh, well, why don't you say some things about Venus sextile Neptune? Because I didn't make notes about that one.
Okay, yeah, I just thought, oh, they're like, what's more beautiful than Venus having a lovely flow with Neptune? And, you know, we see Neptune is a higher octave of Venus in modern astrology anyway. So when the two planets associated with, you know, love and beauty and transcending, loving everyone, you know, that's beautiful. So let's mark that off on the calendar. If you've got a date night plan it for then. So that's January 23rd, Venus in Capricorn, sextile Neptune in sign, so extra strong Pisces. So that Venus in Capricorn could be very nicely stabilizing as well. I quite like the Venus in Capricorn vibe.
Yeah, I love it too. And Venus is at 19 Capricorn, so the degrees there are 19 Capricorn and Pisces to watch out and see how those interact with your own chart. But also just, you know, you can tap into any of these opportunity transits during the day, even if those aspects aren't impacting your chart. So this one is maybe controversial, but January 20th, which is tomorrow, so I'm not sure if I'll have the podcast out in time, but Mars will be conjunct Uranus. And I think that there are some pros to tap into with Mars conjunct Uranus, even though it's been being talked about a lot in terms of its square with Jupiter as a challenging aspect. January 20th is Inauguration Day in the United States, so some astrologers have been worried about that chart in the inauguration chart. But if we just break down Mars conjunct Uranus, this could be a great energy day, perhaps especially if you have Taurus rising or Aries rising. Because if you have Taurus rising, that Mars and Uranus conjunction is probably going to be in your first house. And if you have Aries rising, then Mars is going to be ruling your ascendant and making Mars really important in your chart. So you might get an energy boost if that's you. And Mars in Taurus isn't the most energetic placement for Mars in general. So I also think this might be one of the peak energy days while Mars is in Taurus, where it's going to be until the beginning of March. So if you've been building up stress, this could be a great day to intentionally release that stress by doing Mars. Do something physical. It's Mars in Taurus. So do something physical. Just don't overdo it. And that's the caution here with the aspect with Uranus. It's one of the main risks. So my advice is stick to forms of activity you're used to, you know, stick to the tried and true Taurus, and don't push past your limits like Uranus might be kind of egging you on to do. Might be tempting to take a risk right now, but I'd say resist that temptation.
Resist that temptation to bungee jump.
Yes. If you've never bungee jumped before, this might not be the right day.
Yeah, because I'd say that could be accidents because you've pushed yourself beyond, you haven't checked things, it's been way too spontaneous.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. There's a potential in this aspect for taking things to the extreme as well when Mars and Uranus come together. Now that can be, you know, positive and a negative. Also can kind of raise the heat a bit. So if you find yourself getting hot under the collar, again, I say channel that heat into physical activity or something constructive and tangible. There's the Taurus meshes there. Now, there's another big caveat here. As I mentioned earlier, that this aspect is in a square with Jupiter, and that's yet another caution for not overdoing it. So be careful with that one. On February 11th, we mentioned that Venus is going to be conjunct Jupiter. This is always a lovely opportunity transit to notice and track and be aware of and to take advantage of, because if you blink, you miss it. It's a quick one. So opportunity and growth regarding connection and relationship are highlighted here with Venus and Jupiter together, especially with when it comes to how you love and how you allow yourself to be loved, Venus. This is a day to open up your heart generously, in my opinion. But it's not especially emotional in a sugary sweet way because they're both in Aquarius. But that does make it a great time for friendship and conversation. Aquarius is great friendship energy. It's a great time for connecting, sharing ideas, social connection, whether that's online or in person, it'll probably be online. Seek out online groups or online events around that day. And my advice is don't just be a bystander this time. Participate and seek out those kind of events where you have the opportunity to participate and not just sit there and watch. Share your ideas, take a risk to connect, say something nice about what someone else says, comment positively on their ideas and see what happens, see what kind of conversations might unfold. Mercury is going to be retrograde, so it's not the cleanest date for an electional. I'd usually recommend the Venus-Jupiter conjunction for an electional, but there is some good energy to tap into. And if you've got an important action that just has to be taken around then, that might be a good day to do it if you get the ascendant just right. On February 13th, Mercury joins the show here in a conjunction with Venus. And it's coming back to Venus as part of its retrograde cycle. And this just presents another great day for clear thinking, harmonious and objective communication and connection. I'd bookmark this one if you're a writer. I think this is a great writing day and you don't want to miss out on that one. Anything you want to add to that, Vanessa?
I agree with the writing. That's a good addition, actually. And I guess just sitting in your ideas and following them through, jotting anything down that comes through so you don't like lose that little gust of fresh wind.
Yes.
Yeah, like a little moment of genius, perhaps. I think it's interesting when I hear multiple air sign people just love to sit and think.
I think with all this Aquarius, don't you think there's opportunities to really work out some? I mean, if you've been writing something for a while and you've had writer's block, you might have some breakthroughs this month. So make sure,
especially with the retrograde as well. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, so make sure you create some space to take advantage and don't just let these opportunities pass you by.
There is something I'll add to all the Aquarius. You know, it's the original social distancer for sure, but the that other side of becoming too detached is that, you know, we have checked up, which is great. I know how to use Zoom now. Awesome. And but you don't get the oxytocin release unless you're in person using your five senses.
That's right.
And that's something to really keep in mind. Like, obviously we can't in a lot of places be as social as we would like to be, especially in an Aquarian time, super socialite with right. all the randoms. I'm loving it, but choose those people that it's safely and really make sure you're regularly getting that in-person IRL eye contact, yes. you know, safe touch, all those things. And yeah, because I think Aquarius can be related to in its own form sort of depression, and that's maybe one of those reasons why, because it can become isolated,
right,
even within yeah. a group.
So definitely, you know, get out and make connection however you can do that in a safe way, for mm-hmm. sure. I guess if you're in New Zealand, you can go out to you can meet with your friends, right? Because I don't think they have any COVID there. I yeah, also I've heard that in I was just talking to David Raley in China, and he was saying that they're pretty much business as usual there as well. So I don't know
it's
if we have any
much
Chinese
like that
listeners,
here.
But yeah,
at the moment,
that's great.
It's just on and off, like a little close downs. Okay, we're open. It's hard to keep up. Which borders closed? When's it open? We definitely right. can't leave the country. But if you look around where I live, it just looks like the old days. Last year.
Nice. Yeah, I look forward to the old days someday.
the good yeah. part, not the baby out with the bathwater, like, which is another yeah. Aquarius Uranian thing, isn't it? Like, just wants to like throw everything out. There's some great things to keep, and there's some great new things we can adopt, and some things we'd definitely throw in the trash.
Definitely. Well, that brings us to what's on your coffee table.
Well, Tony, not an astrology book. I actually don't read that much astrology because I've done this for so long. So what am I obsessed with this month usually reflects what is on my coffee table. And I went to see the Wonder Woman 1984 movie, which I loved. And so I'm reading The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, a little quote about that is Wonder Woman, of course, is the most popular female superhero of all time and most enduring superhero along with Batman and Superman. It talks about Wonder Woman's feminist roots and, there's a film also I watched about, it's called Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. So this guy that wrote Wonder Woman, you know, it's got to come, a guy wrote it in early 40s, 1941, this person must have been pretty on the edge radically or very progressive, and he certainly was, and there were links to the famous feminists at the time, and he's a self-proclaimed feminist, and it's a very interesting read. I didn't know those things until I started looking into it and doing a Google search, so I'm looking forward to reading that. There's lots of little illustrations of the Wonder Woman comics and cartoons in there as well.
Super cool.
What about you, Tony? What's on your coffee table?
Oh, it's all astrology 24/7 here for me. So I'm reading Exploring Jupiter by Stephen Arroyo, and I absolutely love this book. I passed this one over several years ago because I read a negative review of it, and I, for whatever reason, trusted the review. And now that I'm reading the book, I'm like, I will never trust the negative review again because the book is awesome. It's so good. It's my favorite book on Jupiter. There aren't a lot of books that just focus on Jupiter, and it's really great. It's very thorough. It's got a beautiful cover. If you're watching the video, you can see the cover there. But you know, he looks at Jupiter in the signs and houses and by aspect and by transit. He also does a lot of profiles. He has a great editor who also co-writes some of the profiles of famous folks, and they're really, really rich profiles here. And he also, as always, quotes lots of classic astrology books. And so every time I read a Stephen Arroyo book, I end up buying like 15 other books because he's like name dropping all these different books, and I end up buying all of them. So that's what's on my coffee table. And so how about takeaways for you? What's your takeaway for this month, Vanessa?
Oh, before I get to it, I'll just say I may not be reading an astrology book, but of course I'm applying the astrology to it. So I've had to go and look up all the key players with Wonder Woman
right.
and compare their charts in Synastry, and found lots of, obviously they're all resonating. The director of the new Wonder Woman, Patty Jenkins, Gal Gadot, who's representing our 70s version, Linda Carter, of course, the writer, and Wonder Woman herself, based on the first time, like I made a birth chart based on the first time she debuted. So, yeah, there was astrology applied to it, of course.
Nice. You were telling me before we started the call, there was a degree of Aries that was really important.
Yes. Well, I was thinking, I was looking for Aries because to me, superheroes are such an Aries archetype, or at least fire sign. They do wear capes, maybe a bit of Leo, maybe Sagittarius, we'll see. So I did a little YouTube video on it, not talking about everything, but certainly those key things, which is each person has, so Patty, Linda, Gal, and that Wonder Woman debut chart all have planets at 13 degrees Aries.
Wow.
They have like some Leo correlations as well. But I was like, of course they've all got something in Aries at exactly the same degree. So they're all like resonating with each other. There's certainly some strong Leo. I mean, superheroes tend to wear capes and they're pretty showy. They've got the razzle dazzle. Yeah. And so Gal has Leo rising, the director Patty and the writer have a 27 degree hookup there.
The golden lasso.
I'll say on that, you know, the whole point of her is there's a big element of truth. And the guy that invented her, he also invented the lie detector.
Wow.
There's that, you know, it's reading all these things that have informed what he was trying to express through Wonder Woman. Like it wasn't just a comic for him. It was like a platform to get all these ideas and concepts out, which is what makes it so strong, I think. Yet then he's leading this super secret life himself.
Right.
So secrets and lies and, the lesser of truth. Huge. So
very cool.
Don't we all need that this year?
Yeah, for sure. I wish we had a really huge lasso of truth that we could just wrap around the whole globe.
Incredible. So, it's a bit Sagittarian with the truth, but as well with those vibes in there.
Right.
So key takeaway, all right? Mine is don't fear change, face your fears around it and make friends with it so that you can direct it and not change for change's sake, that don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And ask the question, is this useful?
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. What are yours?
I have get into your headspace this month. I think that's a recurrent theme here. Have highbrow conversations with friends. Step back and view the whole system or structure that you find yourself in and ask yourself what could make it better. And ask yourself, what can you do to help create more equity for your fellow human beings? I have think about your relationship to the old and the new. Where are you clinging to the past, to old structures, old systems of authority, whether that's inner or outer authority? And where do you need to break free from restriction? How can you find balance within these competing drives without buying too much into one side or the other, which is one of the traps of the square? Seek a creative blend instead of the energies as a way to honor and integrate both, and challenge yourself to find ways to honor and integrate both energies in the Saturn-Uranus square.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's that. It's not just Aquarius, it's really that square coming in. Check your ideology. Are you blind faith as well? And not acting it out necessarily just to get the energy out. Like, where are you acting out and where could, how can you integrate this more fruitfully?
Definitely.
And your monthly mantra. Do you have a mantra, Tony?
I have two short ones. I have, I open my mind to objective truth. And then I have, I create coherence by synchronizing mind and heart. I wrote that last one because there's so much, I do say get into the headspace energy, but the pitfall of that this month, because there's so much of it, is there's a risk of getting a little bit too much in your head and out of your heart. So I like this idea of having a mantra to constantly remind yourself to synchronize your head and your heart.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a real pitfall of Aquarius generally, isn't it? And dialed up now with that square.
Yeah.
I've got a few, so I'll just pick a couple. Along with yours, it's I easily find myself open to other points of view while maintaining my own.
Nice.
I easily find innovative solutions to new and old problems, and I easily create the change I need in my life.
Beautiful.
So what have you got coming up, Tony?
Yeah, that wraps up our podcast. So we'll just talk about some things we have coming up at Astrology University. We have two webinars, like I said, on Saturn square Uranus, and those are on January 30th and February 13th. Head over to astrologyuniversity.com and click on the event calendar to find those dates and the registration info. Then we have a really important event coming up. I do this once a year, February 6th to 27th. And then there's another date in May, but it's the Saturn Return Boot Camp for the first Saturn Return. Now, this is an experiential 5-week process. So it's not just me talking at you about your Saturn Return. I do a little bit of that at the beginning to set it up and kind of lead you into it. But then I will be leading a very small group of folks. We cap registration on this one at 20. Through their Saturn return. So this is for you if your Saturn is in Aquarius and you're in your late 20s. If your Saturn is not in Aquarius and you're not in your late 20s, you can skip this one because this is really meant for folks who are in that Saturn soup right now, Saturn and Aquarius soup, to be together with each other and to process. So this is a really great time to sync up with other folks who are in the same boat, but to also get support from somebody who can help guide you through the process. And I have a series of processes that we'll do each week. You'll have kind of homework each week, a journaling process that you'll do, and then we'll come back and share and talk about what you've learned each week. So we'll have 4 sessions in February, and then we'll take quite a long break, and then we'll have a follow-up session in May. And I do that on purpose so that you have time to integrate and process some of the material, and of course, also some time for some events to happen, which usually do during this period, so that we can check in again and get another a boost of support and also share what's come up since we last met. So that starts on February 6th. I hope you can join me for that if you're having your first Saturn return. For those having their second Saturn return, we will have a separate process for you starting in May. So I'll tell you more about that later. On February 17th, we have a new course, the Retrogrades Planets course, which I'm very excited about. This is one of our 4-year program courses, which means there's homework and there's reading assignments. We're going to be reading Aaron Sullivan's classic book on retrograde planets. And I'm co-teaching this one with Saffron Rossi, who's amazing, and she's going to be presenting a mythic take on some of the planets in a retrograde context. We're going to be mainly focusing on Mercury, Venus, and Mars, and we'll talk a little bit about Jupiter as well, though. And then I'm going to be talking about walking you through some of the technical and meaning application dynamics of the retrograde planets, both natally and by transit. But this one will mostly focus on natal planets retrograde. So I hope you can tune in for that one as well. Again, that's February 17th. So head over to our calendar to learn more and anything that you have going on, Vanessa.
Well, finally, Cosmic Power, my book, second book, is it's debuting in the US, so it's out everywhere else. But due to everything that's been happening and COVID, I guess the pipelines have slowed down. So February 4th, you can buy that
Yay.
locally, straight off the shelf. Urban Outfitters will have it, so it'll
Oh,
be
wow.
everywhere. Everywhere will have it. So I noticed they're stocking this as well, which is very
Cool.
exciting. So we'll see how that goes. And of course, as always, open for reading. So come and let me live my best seventh house life one-on-one with you.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you for joining me today, and happy Aquarius season, everyone. And we will see you again next month
Stay cosmic.
for Pisces. Yeah. All right. Take care. Well, thanks for listening in this month, folks. And for our featured nonprofit this month, we have the National Center for Transgender Equality. And the mission for this nonprofit is to advocate for change policies and to change society to increase understanding and acceptance of transgender people. In the nation's capital and throughout the country, NCTE works to replace disrespect, discrimination, and violence with empathy, opportunity, and justice. Their vision is to envision a society in which transgender people not only survive but thrive with accepting families and communities, full self-determination over their identities and bodies, and freedom from disrespect, discrimination, and violence. For this vision to become a reality, we must also create equity, equal opportunity, safety, health, and economic well-being for all people over their entire lifetimes. If you'd like to donate to the cause and support their mission, please head over to transequality.org. That's T-R-A-N-S, equality.org, to learn more and to donate, and I hope you do. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again next month for The Cosmic Eye. Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. Study astrology online with some of the great astrologers of our time at www.astrologyuniversity.com, where we offer webinars, online classes, and virtual summits to bring you inspiration, connection, and insight through the study of astrology. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.